Hey, Darren, instead of calling this episode Revolt Lab Podcast with Jessica Kabeem, we ought to call it Revolt Lab Podcast with Jessica Kaboom.
Absolutely, because when people hear about her little tidbits on leadership and talking about authentic student voice, I mean, there absolutely was the boom that came out of it.
You know, and she's so immodest. She doesn't talk about all her varied work that she's done with leadership, but she goes deep into grace. She goes deep into student-centered leadership, student-centered schools, and what she's doing with her schedule is going to be fantastic. So I can't wait.
Yeah. So everyone, make sure you stay tuned here for the Revolt Lab podcast, because you're going to hear a revolutionary conversation.
Hello, revolutionaries. We're so happy that you're back with us. It's always good to connect with you for another day. We're all on our journey to make revolutionary changes in our school that benefit our learners. And Darren and I, Darren, I'm so happy that we have a good friend with us, somebody who's been part of our circle for a long time. Jessica, how are you today?
Good. Before we got on, I just said, you know, all the buses are gone. So that's always a good day, the first few weeks of school. So
that's right. That's right.
It could be a kindergartner or a middle schooler and you still can't remember your bus number. That's constant.
A lot of truth in that one.
And the panic that sets in for adults and kids when we can't remember that bus number.
Exactly.
That's the part. How do you manage that one? So we almost call this podcast, instead of Jessica Kabeem, you know, which is her name, well, I'm gonna just call it Jessica Kaboom, because we're gonna have some. I'm sure we're gonna hit on a topic that's gonna blow your mind. So, Jessica, for the three or four people in our audience who don't know who you are, because you know we know you're worldwide, for those three or four people, please give us a brief synopsis of your background and where you are right now.
Absolutely. So I have been in Austin, Minnesota since 2007. You got to hit that accent. And I started
hit the accent again. Where is
it? Minnesota.
I'm
a Minnesota transplant and I still got that accent. So I started as an assistant special ed director and then moved into assistant principal at the middle school level and loved it. And then got asked to take on a principalship at a kindergarten center. And I thought, well, I've lived in secondary for a long time. How hard is kindergarten going to be? I was schooled before morning snack.
Right.
Like legit. Like I was going to cry. I felt like I needed a nap. So spent 6 years at the happiest place in southeastern Minnesota, which is an all day, every day kindergarten center here. Served 400 to 425 students every year. And they were all five. And sometimes the adults were five too, including me, because it's just a lot. I mean, it's a lot of love, a lot of little people, a lot of learning how to communicate. And then 3 years ago, I took the leap to come back to the middle school. So I was the assistant principal here, and now I've been the principal here for 3 years. And this year, we're 7-8 campus, 850 kids, and both grades I had in kindergarten. So it's full circle.
It's full circle. And they remember all those hugs you did not give.
Right. They were like, gosh, are you mean now? What did one kid say? He's like, your hair is more yellow now. And I'm like, you know, I'm going to go with yellow over gray any day.
That's right. That's exactly right. That's mm-hmm. right.
So yeah. So that's kind of my thing.
That's where you are. And we love that answer is literally full circle. So that's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. So before we go to the deeper part, to the next part, we like to ask our participants, and this is to help our audience get to know you better on a more personal level. Tell us who you were, tell us who you are, and tell us who you hope to be.
Oh, that's a good one. I was very busy. I thought leading with a title meant you were on all the time and doing everything. So very busy. Who I am now is much more balanced. So I think coming back to the middle school, it was a challenge for me to figure out how I can do this well and still lead at home. And so I really wanted to, obviously after talking to my family about making this shift back, is I want to do this better. And then who do I want to be? I just want to continue to be a change agent. I love coming into a school and a community and really empowering the individuals around me and being a part of something really incredible. So this is kind of where I'm excited to be right now in life.
Is balance I'm sorry, Darren.
Well, no, I mean, you mentioned balanced. I mean, didn't you write on being balanced at some point?
I did as a kindergarten principal, which was like, you know, the buses leave at 2 in the kindergarten center. It's like 4 o'clock here. We're still rolling and we've got after school activities. So, I did write about balance and the different quadrants of life that are really important to think about, not just 50-50, but, you know, professional development, cultivating your passions, your personal life, and then your positional balance. And it was really exciting to try to take what I had learned all those years at the kindergarten center and then figure out how to make it work here, you know, at a campus that's twice the size. Now I have an assistant principal and a grade level counselors and a lot of other people to support. So how I had to learn how to delegate so much better. One of the other pieces I love about this position was my first year, I had my eldest son as an eighth grader. And now these 2 years I've had Isaiah in school with me. So he and I were in kindergarten together, seventh and eighth grade. And I think that's been, ironically, moving back to this level has helped me become more relevant and understand more about middle schoolers and then be able to support my own middle schoolers at home.
Yeah, son is there. Culturally, you're understanding the TikTok, you're understanding all those other pieces with it. But I'm kind of curious, because since you've gone elementary, or you went middle, elementary, back to middle, what did you realize are the similarities with working with people at either level?
Relationships. I did not, as a assistant principal, I didn't invest enough in building relationships with adults. I spent a ton of time building relationships with kids, and I really enjoyed that. When I went to the kindergarten center, I realized the importance of building relationships with adults, with teachers, paraprofessionals, secretaries, and families. And so coming back to the middle school, I'm spending a lot more time talking with the adults and getting to understand their whys and their passions and what they're bringing to the table. So then we as a community can become better for our kids. And so that's been, and I think parent involvement in regards to that's really been something I've been focused on as I come back to middle school, because a lot of times middle school parents, you know, well, they already know it all. Like, we've already been through middle school, elementary, and we're going to go into high school. We've been doing the school thing for a while, but middle school parents, especially during COVID, really have a lot to say and share and support in this season. Cause it's a lot right now. I mean, I'm speaking from working in the building 5 days a week when both my boys are home 3 days a week on the hybrid schedule. So I'm experiencing it on both layers and both titles.
I want to balance your immodesty with some, you know, I want to balance your modesty with a little immodesty. So just so our audience knows, Jessica's, one of Jessica's books is called Balance Like a Pirate. So this is what she was referring to earlier, the four quadrants. It's a great read. It's a great knowledge point for educators, particularly now when we're in a time where we're all stressed and trying to figure some things out. You know, some of us get puppies during COVID. Some of us dive deeper into work. Did that hit home, Jessica, about getting a puppy?
A little bit. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. Herman the handful. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Follow him on Instagram. That's about it.
But is balance hard?
Absolutely. I think it is. And I think it's constantly, you can't take it for granted. Because, and I think we all experience that every back to school season, whether it's COVID or not, you put in a ton of effort into starting the school year well. And then at some point you got to realize the school year started and I need to start to pull back. I mean, we all recognize before school starts, we're putting 12-hour days in, we're doing a lot of work on the weekends, we're being more in tune and in touch as we're getting things set up. But at some point we have to recalibrate again and say, okay, I can't be on like this and keep going for the whole school year. It's not going to be sustainable. And it's not something that we want to model for our staff and families either.
What do you do different now for your staff that you did not do before you became a balancing expert?
Pretty practical things to start with. And I just sent out our Friday focus last week and said, this is something I haven't been doing well lately. And I'm going to start doing again, is not emailing at night. Just because technology is on 24/7 doesn't mean we have to be. And I didn't realize when I'm sending emails at 5-6 at night, when it's convenient to me, I'm unintentionally telling staff that they should be responding to emails at 7, 8, 9, 10 at night. And so I've really been clear to say, okay, starting now this week, I'm back to my regular office hours. So after 5, you won't receive an email from me. I really try by 4 o'clock contract time. But if you need to get a hold of me, you can text me and you can call me, you know, but I'll probably only check email once at night. And if you send me something directly, I'll respond to you, but I'm not going to be sending stuff out. And I think that just gives teachers who might be parents as well, permission to turn it off as well. So that's been, and then the other piece too, that's a visual response to this, is I try really hard not to, I try hard to leave the office by 5 or 6. I don't want to be the last car in the parking lot, because again, that models the importance of being here and being on all the time. And so, and then I just kind of keep track or tally of who is here after I am. And then if it's consistent, then I just have a conversation with them. Like, what's going on? Is it something going on at home? Is it something going on at work? Or what's going on that it's 5:30 at night and you're still here and not home? So two kind of practical things that I do that have really, I think, helped and shown the staff the value of, I value as a person, not just in your position. And that means you got to leave. That sounded terrible. Like, yeah, leave, like go, not like leave, fired, terminated, leave.
I'm going to say that sounded bad, but what sounded terrible was I'm looking in the parking lot to see who's here after me. And then I'm checking if you're here 2 or 3 days after me, then I'm coming at you. I'm going to ask, I got some tough questions. You know, that's what sounded terrible.
See, I know, but it is something in people. And it's funny when you have those conversations, they're like, they don't even realize they're doing it. They're like, oh, I just want to finish this. I just want to do this. And I'm like, no, I'm noticing. And I'm like, what are you not doing? Or what are you not wanting to go home to? And that's the other thing too, is when you're communicating and really being present and visible and in tune with the staff, you start to learn their rhythms and when things are off and how you can support them when things aren't well, which we know happens to all of us.
Yeah, it does, because I always tell people, well, I mean, we're all failed human beings to some extent, and it hits us at certain times. We always talk about here in our building to look out for each other, but then also especially make sure you talk to each other. Don't talk to someone else about what's going on. Talk to the person you need to talk to. But what we've started telling our staff, Jessica, which you kind of identified, is communicate early with our kids, because our kids are really good at emailing. With our kids and our parents, when is the time when you are shut off for the night? And for us, we've identified it's at 5 o'clock. You can go ahead and email, but there's no guarantee you're going to get an email till the next morning. And that is really hard for a lot of our parents, because they think you should be on demand all the time. Yeah. So,
and that's anyway. And to piggyback on that, I think that's particularly what exacerbates that is now that we're in COVID, we're fully remote. Well, our teachers are at school, our students are at home, but in a month we're going to go to the hybrid model like you were describing earlier, Jessica. So I think people being having it in your hand, the device in your hand or in your lap, it just builds up the expectation or the thinking, well, why can't I? You know, it's already right here. Why can't I? It just, just that ease and access and the awesomeness of technology, it exacerbates the us losing the balance and the empathy that others need that balance and that others need to turn it off as well. I like your suggestion though about not emailing at night, because I'm horrible at it. I'm horrible at it. I'll even say in the email, don't reply back now, but it's still the same thing. It's still the same thing. Yeah, we don't spend enough time in other people's shoes. Mm-hmm. So talk to us about coming back to middle school now. You know, this school year and COVID. What's your experience been like for your teachers and your students? Now they've been back for a couple of weeks.
It's an adjustment, and it's the most incredible staff and students. If you have to go through a pandemic, this is the place to do it, because in the middle of August, when the governor announced, here's your options, we went with the hardest. We went with hybrid. And then we recognized in our listening sessions with families and students and staff that we were really in crisis in the spring. We were trying to continue our 7-period day, trying to do everything that we were doing and flipping everything completely over in a week, and it didn't work. And so we made the decision to move to a hybrid block schedule. So this beautiful 7-period day, beautiful. Like, I've been building middle school schedules for like 8 years, and this one was, and within a week it was gone. So we actually made it an 8-period day, put 4 periods first quarter, 4 periods second quarter, 90-minute blocks, and that 8th-hour class, we created an academic coach class. So when the kids are in person, it's specifically to decrease the cognitive load of our learners. And so they're in learning our Schoology, our learning management system. They're learning Infinite Campus, how to take attendance. They're learning our Microsoft platform. And so on the days that they're home, they're more equipped and better able to be independent. And then also they can download everything when they're in school and take it home and work on it. And I mean, we made huge changes in our master schedule and our teaching practices in 10 days. And we're all still here.
Yeah.
I don't know about Christmas cards yet, but we're all still here. We might get them later on, but I think even with the teachers initially were like, well, why can't I? And that was the other piece too, is why can't I just teach in person and remote at the same time? And that was a non-negotiable no. I just said, you are going to burn out. I've been watching social media. It's not looking like that's the frame to do. And so we've communicated to families, when your child's at home, the work will be in the folders, but the teacher will not be online with your children at home, because they have 2 days to be in person, working in small groups, building base groups, building relationships with the other students. We'll set them up for home independent work, but we really need them to be in and focused with the 15 kids in session while the other 15 are home. That was a hard sell at first. And now people are like, I totally see, I could have never done both at the same time.
Yeah.
And no overloads either. Our teachers are really always willing to do overloads and take on an extra class here or there. And we made sure every teacher had a 90-minute prep, especially this first quarter, because we thought the work is a lot and we can't have anyone just burning out right away. So, and then the academic coach class is pretty much all prescribed by our counselors. And so it's an opportunity to build relationships with some foundational SEL learning, but helps us all kind of adjust to this block schedule that we weren't planning on doing in the spring. Something we just decided was the best for kids, but they've done fantastic work on it.
Do you think that's gonna be something that you all that'll stick around after COVID?
I'm really interested to see, because walking into it, there were people that had really solid beliefs on whether or not this was good or not for kids or not, but recognizing in this season, this is the best model for kids. One of the things I'm really intrigued about is this academic coach class, which I'm really hoping by the end of the quarter, people see that as a value add to our organization and not something we just did for COVID, and seeing that this could maybe sustain itself as we move into subsequent school years.
All right. Two schools ago, Spring Lake Middle School, we went to that modified block.
And okay.
9-minute periods, and we put social studies and science on an A day, B day schedule, on an A B schedule, I should say, along with our exploratories. And it took us a year to get there. And once we were there, it was a done deal. Give your ELA and math teachers 90 minutes, lets you totally rethink groups and the value of technology in the classroom. For your teachers who needed some more time, I can understand how training, you know, it's not even training. It's just grace. It's just giving mm-hmm. them space and grace to be able to play with it. How do you make sure that people are good? How do you make sure that you're giving people the grace and the space and the support that they need?
That, and I think that's been such a challenge for me moving back to middle school, is really empowering our teacher leaders to have that say in that. So we have department chairs and we have team leaders in our building. And so empowering them with kind of their roles and responsibilities, and then they really feel out their teams and come back and say, this is more professional development we need. This, we need more understanding as to why we're doing this work. And we just kind of balance that out, or just even a heads up, like, this staff member's having a rough go, maybe give them a week before you do that formal observation, or this staff member's having a rough go, just go check on them, things like that. So it's empowering teacher leaders to kind of help see things from a different lens that I might not be seeing. Cause that's, I can walk into a situation and not fully understand it, and a colleague can go shoulder to shoulder and say, this is where we're at with this. So we're really trying to develop playlists. So we don't have kids on Wednesdays right now. And so we're doing some playlists for professional development. So right now, like, learning base groups, how to set up base groups for kids on their distance learning days so they can connect, how to continue to work on flipped lesson development. And we spent the funniest lesson that was, I didn't think it would go so well, but it was creating a virtual classroom. Because you see those kind of on social media, you know, the welcome back. Oh my goodness. Some of these middle school, I mean, we are competitive here. Like, whose Bitmoji was better? Who's right, YouTube, you know, who's TikTok, who's this or that. And, but it was fun. Cause I think that's the other thing too about middle school, is there's a lot of connections with kindergarten. So play, collaboration, connections. I mean, having middle school teachers compete who's the best Bitmoji. I mean, that was unexpectedly fun and worthwhile. And then just the extension of thinking about it from the kids' side, like how much time and investment you took to relate to your students and show them more about who you are so that they can learn together with you. So that was kind of a fun, unexpected outcome this fall.
So Jessica, when I think about you, I think about, you just hit a couple words, fun. Anytime having a conversation with you, there's such a brightness that comes from when you talk. And so let's talk about fun, because too many times we get caught in our profession of it's point A, point B, point C, turn the page, let's keep going. And we forget about the fun factor. And I think you communicate that, or you just did right now talking about the competition, but you practice it with your family too. I mean, if people have gone to one of your sessions, they know about your stealthies.
My right? Stealthy, yep. Mm-hmm.
Stealthies mm-hmm. that you do. So just right now, just have fun talking about fun. Just tell us what the importance is. And if people look at you and kind of say, well, what are they learning in math? And helping people understand that just the fun that we should be having.
Well, and I think, and especially now, you know, from a parent and a professional, empowering kids to have fun and what they're passionate about is super important. And so Darren kind of mentioned, my oldest son lives by his phone. He is on his phone all the time. I have apps to shut it down when he's at school, but at home. And so like 2 years ago, I started this stealthy game. And so I take a picture of him in the background as a selfie if he's on his phone. And then I tag him on Instagram and wait to see how long it takes him to realize I just caught him. And so I think I have like 60 of these now, of these stealthy pictures on Instagram. But it's something that he and I do as a game to connect with each other. And then Isaiah, who is adamant he will never have social media and rarely uses his cell phone, loves U.S. history like no other. And so we went to Gettysburg a few years ago and he had a blast and just memorizing facts, and we watched videos together, and he likes to quiz me on amendments and what I don't know and what I should know as a middle school principal. And so it's been really fun and interesting. And then just translating that into school, you know, spending time this weekend, I got to go to a student, he messaged me, which was kind of fun. He found me on my professional Instagram and invited me to a soccer game. So as an eighth grader, he's playing varsity soccer. And we are like state champions. I mean, this kid is, And he was so proud that I had taken a picture and I put it on Instagram and tagged him. And I saw him in the hall today and just cheered that guy on. And seeing kids in their arts, in their music, connecting with future writers, they think it's hilarious. I've written 4 books and I still work here. They think immediately you write a book and like you have a yacht. So there's a little work on my end to kind of help with. But I think it's just having fun with building those solid relationships and finding those sparks with kids. And then trying to help incorporate that into learning and making it just meaningful, because we have such middle school, such an opportunity for empowered leadership. Like there's so many untapped leaders in our building that don't see that in themselves. And so it's our job to really shine that light on them and pull it out, because they come back, like the 10th graders are like, why did you always put me in these groups, or why did you have us do these things? And now they're like, oh, now I get it. Now I, you know, and they come back and they email, like they'll email you. And they do that with our teachers here. They'll email to ask questions, how to register for things at the high school, or thank you for doing these things. And so having fun and making connections is just incredibly important at these middle years.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, that sounds very unconventional in your leadership approach.
Derek, you are good at this.
This is Derek again, balancing Jessica's modesty with some immodesty. Jessica, as you mentioned, she has 4 books. One book, and we mentioned Balance Like a Pirate, but mm-hmm. Unconventional leadership is, wait a minute, that's not newest, is it?
No, that was the third one, though.
That was the third mm-hmm. one. So, but in unconventional leadership, you talk about, our need to do different, our need to rethink how we build relationships and how we look at things and how we go about to rethink this role, to rethink our roles and what we do. If you could talk to, no, you know what, let me frame this way, Jessica. I was talking to a group of principals in Wisconsin, I think, and it just shocked me that there were some first year principals last year. That's right. Your eyebrows raised.
Yep.
Your first year as principal is when the country shuts down, is when the world shuts down, that kind of thing.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's not a time to think about what you learn day 3 in principal school, what do you tell people to help them embrace the flexibility that they need to embrace different answers and different approaches to what's ahead of them?
That's a great one. And I just had a conversation with my friend Jimmy Casas about this too, because one of the things he's always pressed me on is, as principals, we really lead with our feet and everything's in our head. So we're constantly making changes, changing bus routes, changing this and changing that. And we don't always take the time to process our practice and put it down. And I knew moving into this season, this fall, if I wasn't grounded in tenants.
Excuse me. Shout out to Jimmy Casas for a great thought. How about that, Jimmy?
There it is. There it is. There's happy holidays. There's your present, Jimmy. We're good to go now.
That's right.
There it is. So I wanted to take time though and really think about, before I went into the fall, what is absolutely essential? What do I want for myself as a leader to be measured on? And what do we want for our school? And so we took time, and I think you can kind of see these little like vision cards on my wall, but we like, what do I want the community to know Ellis for middle school? What do I want parents to feel when they're here, or virtually or in person? What do I want students, and what do we want staff? And so grounding in those 4 stakeholder groups and coming up with, okay, what's our foundation for why we're here and do this work? So really keeping that why constant. So then when everything is flying at us right now, which it's coming, like we could be distance learning tomorrow. And instead of throwing everything out and rebuilding everything, what's our why? You know, why did we go to a block schedule? You know, because we knew that we want to decrease the cognitive loads for our students, and we want to build deeper relationships with teachers and students, so we decrease the amount of classes that they're going to have to navigate. You know, what do we want our community to know? Like, we want to know that we're more than what people put on Snapchat. And so maybe that means that we need to put a better positive spin on our work on Facebook and other social media platforms and continue to just brand ourselves differently. With our families, I mean, we speak 30 different languages in our school. Wow. And our families have such rich history and perspective that they can bring. And so instead of just having a sign up or a show up kind of event, what are things that they could share with our students? How can we bring them in as partners? That was probably the most valuable thing in my listening sessions with families is I asked specific families ahead of time, can I run the spiel in front of you? Can I do this presentation to 10 families before I have to do it in front of 800 and give me your honest feedback? What did you hear me say? What am I missing? And I had families, we're a Microsoft district, and one of our biggest employers is a Teams district. And they're like, they gave me tutorials on Microsoft Teams. Parents did for free. Like ask people for help. Like don't be an independent contractor in COVID or regular school. Like there are people out there that know and can do things much better, graphics, fundraising, and bringing in different community connections. It's been really valuable to learn from other families and their backgrounds and make it more meaningful. And so I got really passionate about that, Derek. I don't know if I went the wrong direction. But I think being grounded in how do we want it to represent and how do we want people to see our school and keeping that at the core. So then when things keep flying at you, you know what to deflect and what to take on and build into what you're doing.
So Jessica, one thing we like to do, kind of the theme of the podcast deals with the revolution. So last question for you here. What do you consider education needs for the biggest revolution right now?
Oh, students. We need student voice, like authentic student voice, not just a small group of kids at lunch once every 6 months. Like authentic and hear it. And I think in order for that to happen, you have to be willing to be visible and vulnerable. So it has to be built over time. It can't just be.
Are we built for that?
Mm-hmm. I think especially moving past this season, and we talked about this before we aired, is that ability to have grace and vulnerability and humility in our work. And I think it would be a detriment to education if we didn't reflect on COVID and what we learned and what we can do better. And we can't do that without students a part of that. What worked for you? What didn't work? What did you learn in this season? And how do you want school to look different because of it? And being able to hear their responses without getting defensive or criticizing or critiquing, but really just listening to that. And that is going to be really important because I think there's so much we can learn from this time. And I know I've already experienced some of that learning and growing. And I think I know I'm going to lead differently because of this. And I know teachers are going to teach differently in our building because of this. So I think having students share their experiences so we can make sure that what we're doing mirrors what we want for them and what their families want for them as well.
Awesome.
I love your optimism. And maybe I asked the wrong question because I agree we need it and we were capable of it. I don't think that in our preparation, I don't think our preparation readies us for it. So we have to unlearn some things, mm-hmm. and then relearn some things, because you're right. School won't be the same if we really value student voice.
Absolutely.
That is the mic drop answer of the day. So you know, we appreciate you for that one. So Jessica, as we go out, please tell our audience how they can connect to your awesomeness, and please be immodest here and share the 12 books that you've written for us.
All right, so we'll start from the beginning, which was Hacking Early Learning. So that is everything that I wish I would have known or things I made mistakes about that you can learn before you have to unlearn it. So that would be the first. And then it was Balance Like a Pirate, Unconventional Leadership, and then just finished Lead with Grace last year. And so it's really leading with the lens of soft skills. And so taking a look at how we can, it's not just about what we say, it's how we say it and how we circle back around it and how we lead it. And so that's been the last book. And then I've taken a book break. I don't know, COVID book break, taking a break, just enjoying this. And then I'm on Instagram at Jessica Cabine, Facebook Principal in Balance, and then Twitter at Jessica Cabine. So I do like to connect and grow, and I continue to learn things on a daily basis from the PLN that we're all a part of. And Derek and Darren, you're fantastic and always awe-inspired. When I met both of you, I was like, they're real. And they said hi.
Not even. But I do remember the year that we met, though. As a matter of fact, the year we met, I won a copy of Hacking Early Learning. I won a copy in the audience. But since I'll be honest, I gave it to an elementary principal who sat next.
Should. You don't want dust on that thing. Somebody's gonna use that thing. You're not gonna use it, that's for sure.
But looking back, you know, now Darren, you know, it has definitely gone up in value. I could probably sell and buy that boat we talked about earlier.
There you go. Yeah, I know the yacht the middle schoolers think we get for writing books.
That's right. Jessica, thanks for sharing time with us. We love you so much. Hope you have a great year up in Minnesota, and yeah, let's all stay connected.
All right. Thank you, too.
Tell you what, this episode you just heard was awesome, but if you want to hear some more great episodes, check out some of the other people that we've had on here. So we just encourage you to share, subscribe, and really just be thinking about how to be revolutionary.